This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast. Oh, yeah. Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. until 8:30 a.m.
Only double.
Grab your pants.
Good morning, listeners. You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show here at 3CR with me, Hannah, and Rob.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. It's so freezing this morning.
Yeah, all of my mirrors and windows in my car.
Yeah, it's getting to that point in the year, hey.
Yeah.
I actually got in the car and I was like, oh, maybe I should have checked if I had, like, you know, frost on my window.
Yeah.
Anyway, how are you?
I'm good. Little chaotic start.
Yeah.
When I was driving in today, I was just autopilot driving home. And then I realized and I was like, oh my God, what am I doing?
I hate when that happens. You just blank out and you're like, why am I here? But you made it.
I made it.
You made it with so much time. You're so brave.
Much time. Not that much time.
I went to the Coburg Makers Market on the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
And I bought a really beautiful zine of, like, screen-printed artwork with, like, imagined faces and real slogans from the May 1968 protests in France. Yes, it was really beautiful to have that. And then I was like reading into it, right? Because this person was obviously telling me, like, you know, student demonstrations basically sparked a whole month of protests across the country in 1968 in France, including a general strike.
Mm.
But anyway, yeah, so this person had sort of like imagined people's faces and then like put real protest slogans that they used. And it was really beautiful. But anyway, I was like looking into it and you can buy like original posters from that time, but they're like $800 each.
Damn. That'd be cool though.
That would be so amazing.
Yeah.
Yes, I haven't read too much into them. Otherwise, I'd talk a little bit more about them. But it was really beautiful to find such a cool piece of artwork, and what a cool, like, beautiful idea as well.
Yeah.
To just, like, imagine people's faces and get real, real slogans from a protest movement. And then I was talking to them about the student protests for Palestine here, particularly in, is it the University of Melbourne where the encampment was?
Mm.
And I remember, like, was it the University of Melbourne or was it Monash where they were monitoring the Wi-Fi?
I think it was Melbourne.
It was Melbourne, right? Yeah, this is what I was saying. I was like, I'm pretty sure it was Melbourne where they would, like, students would organize protests using the University of Melbourne's free Wi-Fi and then staff from the University of Melbourne would track them through that.
Yeah.
Just so dystopian and so disgusting.
It's quite relevant, actually, because in the interview that we're going to play second in the show with Gemma, who's currently on the Freedom Flotilla, she was a part of the Melbourne Uni protests. Whoa. And she talks about a little bit about what happened.
Cool.
There as well.
I'm really excited to hear that. And yeah, like, it's super special that we were able to get that interview.
Yeah,
from amazing. Someone on the flotilla.
Yeah.
And as we were saying yesterday, you know, like, I'm sure they've been inundated with media requests, but I'm sure so much of that media attention has been like, why do you want to stand for Palestine? You know, like, you know, what about Israel? you know, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. Anyway, so that's happening second up, as you said, Hannah. Mm-hmm. But first of all, we're going to play a few speeches from Saturday's Protect the NDIS rally, which 3CR actually did a special broadcast for the rally. So folks can listen to the first hour of speeches from 1 to 2 on the 3CR website. But we're going to play a few speeches that weren't able to be aired. So we've got a speech from Christian Asturian and Ishtar Hope, who are both disabled people, because obviously super important to platform disabled voices when we're talking about a scheme that directly affects their lives, right? Mm-hmm. So that those are happening for first up, those two speeches. And yeah, do you want to talk about what's happening last?
And then last on the show, we're going to be bringing you the third episode of the regular segment Wing Beats Per Minute, which is all about the importance of insects within ecosystems. And this week's episode is focusing on fire ecology, which lines up pretty well with the interview I had 2 weeks ago with Phil Zylstra.
Mm. Who's Phil Zylstra?
He is the fire ecologist, fire scientist.
Yeah.
And we talked about planned burns and their impact on forests and how they're actually making fires more, they're making fires worse for the years to come.
Mm, yeah. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really excited to hear that.
Yeah.
It sounds like a really good rounded show. So we should get into our headlines, hey?
Yes, we should.
Some folks know about it, some don't. Some will learn to shout it, some won't. But sooner or later, baby, here's a ditty. Say you're gonna have to get right down to the real nitty gritty. Let's get right down to the real nitty gritty. Now one, two, nitty gritty. Now yeah, boom, nitty gritty.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR Community Radio. These are the news headlines for Monday, the 11th of May, 2026. Last week, reports from HSBC revealed the British bank has fully divested from Albert Systems following a direct action campaign by the group People Against Genocide. The company had an $8 million stake in Israel's largest weapons manufacturer and dropped 96% of those shares back in March, with the rest being shed in April. People Against Genocide have been targeting the bank since December of 2025, with actions including throwing red paint and shattering windows across more than 10 branches of the bank. HSBC, and this is pretty alarming, HSBC had initially divested from Albert Systems back in 2018 and was rather vocal about that divestment. But between then and 2025, it had slowly accumulated more than 16,000 shares. So as I said before, HSBC had initially divested 96% of its shares back in March. People Against Genocide then vowed to continue their campaign against the bank until it had fully divested from the Israeli weapons producer. Yeah.
Also in news this week, the Human Rights Law Center reported that the UN Committee on the elimination of racial discrimination has expressed serious alarm that systemic racism, racial discrimination is resulting in persistent over-imprisonment of First Nations children and called on governments across Australia to take urgent action. The committee has taken the unusual step of urging Australian governments to combat structural racial discrimination and fully respect its international law obligations and standards. This follows a complaint submitted in April 2025 by Professor Megan Davis and Associate Professor Hannah McLeod, supported by the Human Rights Law Centre. The UN committee expressed, quote-unquote, grave concern that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children and communities continue to face persistent racial discrimination and serious human rights violations in the justice system. This includes racial profiling and over-policing, resulting in persistent over-imprisonment of Aboriginal children. The introduction of laws imposing life imprisonment on children known as the adult crime, adult time. Harsh conditions in detention, such as solitary confinement and the use of spit hoods, and that the minimum age of criminal responsibility is lower than required under international human rights law in most states and territories. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children accounted for about 65% of children in detention on an average day in 2023 to 2024, despite only making up 6.5% of children aged 10 to 17 in Australia. The authors of the complaint and the Human Rights Law Centre are calling on governments across Australia to heed the UN's committee's recommendations. Science Professor Megan Davis said, quote, following the 50th anniversary of the Racial Discrimination Act, this decision reveals the many ways Australia is ignoring its human rights obligations, and our children are paying the price, end quote. She also said, quote, this warning from the UN is loud and clear, and the time to act is now. These have been the news headlines for Monday, the 11th of May, and you're listening to 3CR on 855 AM.
Want stories straight from community, culture, language, music, and more, all in one place?
Meet ICTV Play, the free on-demand streaming service from Indigenous Community Television.
Watch news, cooking, music, language programs, cultural shows, and heaps more videos made by Mob for Mob, anytime, anywhere.
On your phone, your tablet, or your computer, ICTV Play brings our stories to life and keeps us connected, no matter where we are.
Download the app today from your favourite app store or jump online at ictv.com.au/app.
Showing our way.
A 3CR supporter.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings, cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR Community Radio. It is almost 14 minutes past 7 in the morning. We are now going to hear a speech from Saturday's Protect the NDIS rally. We've got two speeches, but this first one is by a Christian Astorian, who is talking about the importance of the NDIS, why we should defend it, and their message to the government as a disability advocate. And they also talk about the campaign to make public transport accessible for wheelchair users on Sydney Road.
Thanks, everybody. It's great to see so many people here today. And we should always remember that the NDIS is for everybody. The NDIS was created for all Australians with a disability who need support in their everyday lives. Problem is, it was created with the idea that free market will take care of everything and adjust itself. As we all know, the free market idea doesn't work. And we already have the evidence with childcare and healthcare. There is the need for safeguard and regulation to protect participants and a monitoring system in place to discourage overcharging for services and equipment. The yellow one. It is very upsetting when providers and businesses have different prices for people who are on the NDIS and people who are not on the NDIS. Is it fair to be charged more when you are on the NDIS? If you really want the NDIS to be sustainable in the future, we all have a responsibility to it, including providers and businesses. Therefore, no more blaming people with disability. By cutting off the funding. Another big issue with the NDIS that creates a massive conflict of interest is allowing service provider to also manage people with disability and NDIS funding. How on earth can we expect people with disability funding to receive the best services and support available when there is a clear interest from providers managing client funding to keep everything in-house with no real opportunity to look around for better services and support. Thank you, the NDIS. We should recognize that many people with disability including those who you live in a group setting, and you day services have finally gotten the opportunity in the last few years to be out in the community on a one-to-one support like never before. So, to the government, I would like to say, do not accept people with disability funding for social and community participation. And go for the provider who are charging an arm and a leg for the equipment. Only because you are an NDIS participant. Put people fair, not the profit. We definitely need to defend the NDIS because, thanks to this team, myself and many people with disability here today are able to get out of bed to be here. Thank you, guys. And I would like to remind everybody that I am also involved in a campaign with Sydney Rock for our grandstops, because we want Sydney Rock to be fully wheelchair accessible for the grandstops. So I will invite all of you to join our campaign. Thank you.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR Community Radio. That was Christian Astorian speaking at Saturday's Protect the NDIS rally. They were talking about the importance of the NDIS, why we should defend it, and their message to the government as a disability advocate. Christian Astorian has been a disability advocate in this space for over 30 years and is also a part of the campaign to make public transport accessible for wheelchair users on Sydney Road. We've got another speech that we're going to play from that same rally. This speech is from Ishtar Hope, who is a trans woman and mutual aid organizer who helps support multiple disabled people while also being disabled themselves. They are talking about the fallout of the cuts to the NDIS, using an example from their own life and people in their community. Here's Ishtar.
Hi, my name is Ishtar Hope. I'm a mutual aid organizer and activist who is on the NDIS and who has a lot of loved ones who currently receive help from the NDIS. The proposed plan to cut 160,000 people off the NDIS is a plan to literally remove all support from one-fifth of people under this scheme. The fallout from this decision will be wide-reaching, catastrophic, and extremely costly. Many people with serious health conditions depend on support through the NDIS to stay alive. If this essential support is taken away, many already unwell people will find themselves left with very few options for their future. I have already lost many disabled friends to suicide. I am terrified for what the future holds for those I love. Mark Butler suggests that we should further shift the labour of caring for our loved ones onto our community and informal supports. What this suggestion ignores is that in addition to current NDIS funding, disabled people and their loved ones are already stretched to the absolute limit, supporting each other informally to fill existing gaps and keep each other alive. We will need the wider community to step up and cultivate alternative systems of grassroots support if we want everyone to make it through. Allies will be called upon to put their support into practical action over the coming weeks and months. I speak to this as someone who has been doing the work. I have a friend, today we'll call them Strawberry, who lives with severe psychosis and extreme suicidal thoughts. Their condition makes it impossible for them to use public transport, so the only way they are able to attend community events is through their NDIS funding. These community events are a lifeline to prevent isolation, and they offer Strawberry a key opportunity to build informal community networks, which will keep them alive. When Strawberry was temporarily cut off from their formal NDIS support recently, I volunteered with a crew of informal mutual aid volunteers that stepped in to bridge the gap. For 3 months, I spent 4 hours a day traveling across the city to see them and several additional hours each day providing emotional and social support. Two other close friends, both disabled themselves and full parents of multiple disabled children, handled the complicated bureaucracy required for getting Strawberry back into formal NDIS supports. And there was also a few other people involved in that network as well who contributed a lot as well. This informal community support kept my friend alive when the system failed. They are now back on the NDIS and they have funding to see a support worker 6 days a week. I am able to attend to my own needs again, but I'm living under constant fear of the impact future formal support cuts will have on Strawberry, myself, and our mutual disabled friends or their disabled children. Myself and these close friends were given a glimpse of the future human costs that these proposed changes would carry, not just for the 160,000 people facing the loss of formal NDIS support, but the domino effect on entire communities and support systems. Our only two choices going forward are to save the NDIS and stop these changes going through, or for every so-called ally of disabled people to spend full-time hours every day, every week, doing unpaid work to keep their friends alive. If you care about disabled people, it's time to put your actions where your mouth is and join us to fight for a future where disabled people have the resources we need to stay alive.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR Community Radio 855 AM. That was Ishtar Hope, a trans woman and mutual aid organizer who is supporting multiple disabled people as a disabled person, speaking at Saturday's Protect the NDIS rally. Really important to use real-life examples, which I think gets really cut out in a lot of the coverage of the cuts to the NDIS. As I said earlier in the show, you can listen to more speeches from that rally on the 3CR website. By searching the Protect the NDIS on 3cr.org.au. We're going to take a short break. This is a song called Cobblestones by Malaika Mfame, who is a Tanzanian-Australian singer-songwriter producing music on Gadigal land.
Drowning in Sydney. I I'm failing everyone around me. Grief pressed into the walls of our cobblestoned history. Some cities hold your shame like a mirror. Chosen family bloodlines growing thinner. Then there are places that don't need to know your story. Everything you have to say is shiny, new, and nothing's boring. Held by strangers who didn't need to remember my name. To see past all my hurt, guilt, and shame. I found pieces of myself scattered across dark rooms and quiet streets where the sunrise meets. The edge of night held us bare. We were black trans and she was femme with Palestinian flags in her hair. I wrote this song in bed, feverish and dreaming. This city I'm in had me once again believing. I'm good enough now as I ever have been. I had to learn that on my trip to Berlin.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR. That song was Cobblestones by Malaika Mfame, who is a Tanzanian Australian singer-songwriter and event producer on making art on Gadigal land.
And now we're going to be bringing you a conversation that I had with my friend Gemma on Thursday night. She is on the Freedom Flotilla on the Adela, and you can watch and keep up with everything that she's doing on the Freedom Flotilla on her Instagram if you go to @beanie, @beanie_613. Stay tuned.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm going to go into my world's tiniest bedroom that I share with three people. It smells so bad in here.
Yeah, I bet.
It's really quite jarring, like not showering for like a week and then also having like nine people around you who are also not showering for a week. And you only exist on a 14-meter enclosed space together.
Can you swim? Are you allowed to swim?
I can. Yeah, but I think it's like the thing of like, there's only been like one time where we were kind of just like not moving.
Yeah.
And it kind of felt like it, because like the weather was really beautiful and it was just like lovely and it was like the middle of the Mediterranean. It was like, this would be so nice. But then I was like, it feels disrespectful. And also like we're on like a live stream 24/7.
True.
So yeah. I was just like, I don't think I can do this. But
I was
actually
going to ask
anyway.
How the weather was.
Oh, it's been so nice. The first like 2 days of the sail from Sicily to like where we are now, which is kind of like just north of Crete. We're heading east. The first 2 days were really rocky. It was like 2.5 to 3 meter high waves.
Damn.
And that was it was so grim. I thought we were like sitting out on deck, like it was so rough. And also I'm doing crew work, so I was like sailing, steering the boat in the middle of these, like these, just the work, you know, like it was so scary.
That is so scary.
Yeah, in the dark, it was so scary anyway.
Oh, no.
And also my captain, I love him, but I only speak English, he only speaks Spanish.
Mm.
So we have really no way to communicate through words.
Getting really good at hand signals.
Getting really good at hand signaling each other. But yeah, anyway.
Are you learning Spanish?
The weather's been really nice the last few days. I am learning Spanish and because it's like a life or death situation.
Mm-hmm.
But also It's really good. He also knows some English. Yesterday he asked me, he was eating a lot of cheese, and he said to me, "You know Grolus and Womit?"
I love that.
I know, it was awesome. I'm really, really fond of him.
That's really cute.
I'm so severely underslept. It's actually shocking.
Yeah. How's everyone's spirits on the boat?
Pretty good. It's such a lovely group of people. Mm. Like so many incredibly like inspiring, strong people. And we all get along really well. And there's a lot of laughter amongst the generally quite like somber, like overtone of the mission. But yeah, it's like, it's good. Spirits are high. Like we had the other night, we had an interception scare, which was like a bit stressful. But like we handled that well. And I think that instilled a lot of confidence in like how it's going to go down. If it does happen, you know, hopefully inshallah we make it to Palestine, but, I think that helped instill confidence in a way.
What's your protocol for if that happens?
It's just like making sure everyone's accounted for, making sure everyone, like we've all had heaps of training, like different types of training to be able to deal with like the event of interception and the fallout and what follows. You know, it's just sort of making sure everyone's accounted for, making sure the things that need to be thrown are thrown overboard, making sure, you know, like everyone has a role of things that they need to take care of, and, you know, life jackets and together and what you do with your hands and, you know, like all these sorts of things. The flotilla is like an incredibly strong commitment to like nonviolent direct action. So I think, and like, you know, in 2010, like 10 Turkish activists were killed on board Mavi Marmara.
Yeah.
And so I think like ever since then, especially there's been like a real focus on like how to make sure that you're not doing anything that could be in any way construed as, you know, threatening. Mm. So it's like a lot of like, yeah, like how you put your hands the hands up, which is surrendering, like, because you're not surrendering. But like what you do with your hands to ensure that they're seen, and like you still are empowered, and all these sorts of things are also important, I think, on top of just like generally like the logistical side of like what goes where and who takes care of what and who you're looking out for and who your body is and all that.
Yeah. Well, it's good that everyone's spirits are high after that scary day the other day. Do you want to tell me more about what happened?
Yeah, I mean, it was, we just had the same sort of thing happen, because there was on the 29th or 30th of April, between the 29th and the 30th of April, rather, Global Samud flotilla boats, 22 of them were intercepted just west of Crete in international waters. By the IOF, and they were sort of what happened right before they were intercepted, because what happens is that what are they called, those little boats, there's a name for them, zodiac boats, like come up without their lights on and come up and board your sailboat. But what happened right before that was that there was like sort of helicopters that landed on warships and a cargo ship was next to that, and then like, you know, people presumably got off the helicopters, jumped into the Zodiacs on the warship and came and intercepted people and took them back to the warship and the cargo ship to put them in makeshift prisons. And so what happened the other night for us was that there was an army helicopter that landed on a warship right next to a cargo ship. And then there was like a series of drones circling, like sort of three in the span of like 20 minutes. And there were also an influx of like boats coming from behind of us. And so like we just had to get into position because we'd gotten a tip off from our friend who was aboard the our friend Quiver, who has done more flotilla missions than anyone apart from Hueda Araf, who started the Flotillas to Gaza, who runs Freedom Flotilla, which is what I'm a part of. Yeah. You know, they've been going for 18 years, and she's done the second most missions. And she called and she said, "Oh, if this is what you're seeing, you need to get ready because this is what happened last time." And we were quite close to the interception point that GSF were intercepted at.
Yeah. I was going to ask if anyone on your boat has been on flotillas before.
Yeah, my friend Noah has. She went on the Conscience last year. And her abuse in detention is quite like documented. She just released an article via Dropsite, who she is a journalist for, Dropsite News, and which detailed her like torture in Israeli detention last year. She's a renounced Israeli citizen, and she was placed in isolation and beaten. And before her, my friend Bob, who is another anti-Zionist Jewish person, has also been on three missions before. Has been on one mission, I think it was the Handala, which made it out of the ports and made it, you know, on its way to Gaza, further than Greece. And he's been on one before. And also my friend Santiago, he's also been on a mission. So I think there's three of us out of nine who have been before.
Have they told you about if this mission feels different to the others? Is there any difference?
I think so. I think as well, like, I think it's like public, especially in the last wave in September, October of 2025, there was a lot of attention being paid to the flotilla, which I think imbues a sense of confidence in like the ability, like if you feel more safe, I think is the sentiment. Like that just existing by itself, like you feel more safe when people are watching. And I think there's like a general lack of that because I think the amount of like the things happening in the world and like the very effective sort of, a very effective redirecting of attention by, you know, the powers that be. And also like speaking to that more as well, just like sort of the breadth of conflict in the region enacted by Israel and the US and allies. Like there's like, I think every day you get updates about, you know, the US and Israel violating this so-called ceasefires they have with various, countries in the region. And, you know, like even in like the last few days, there's been like things of Iran saying that they've attacked US warships, and then the US saying no, we haven't, and then there's constantly things going on that are in the region. And I think that's also quite scary. Israel have come out in the last few days and have said that they're going to violently attack boats coming from Turkey for the Sumud flotilla. So that obviously like doesn't feel great, because like the last boats that they violently attacked from Turkey are like 10 people were murdered. So I think it's like there's that as well.
Yeah, heavy.
But I think people seem to think it feels. I think people seem to think it feels different. Like there's been a lot of debate this time as to whether or not the mission goes, like if it's the right time, because there's not as much attention media wise, or if it's the right time, because ultimately what we want is for people to pay attention to the blockade.
Yeah.
Like that's the thing. Like this is a direct action protest of Israel's illegal naval blockade of Gaza. Like they're an unlawful naval blockade of the Gaza Strip. And because it's not something that just exists by itself. Like it's not like this unlawful blockade can just exist because like the Israeli military wants to do it. Like it's only possible because it's upheld by like governments like, you know, so-called Australia. And I think like through diplomatic ties, through the like aiding and abetting of war crimes this is another form of ethnic cleansing, what they're doing in terms of the blockade. So I think yeah, like, if, you know, it's about attention being paid to that. And I think without that to a certain extent, or with less of that, there's a lot of questions as to, like, if it's the right move. And there's a lot of other reasons as well why that is rightfully debated, and a lot of which I agree with.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR 855 AM. We're listening to a conversation that I had with Gemma O'Toole, who is a part of the Freedom Flotilla, who is currently on the Ardilla boat. Stay tuned. What is your boat carrying?
Well, the difference sort of between the Samud Flotilla, who have started in the last few years, and Freedom Flotilla, who have been going for 18 years, mm-hmm. is that the Freedom Flotilla is not this humanitarian aid mission, which is trying to bring, you know, the aim of which is to bring humanitarian aid to Gaza. So my boat's not, you know, like, there's aid for sure, which sort of also is important because Israel has, as the occupier of Gaza, even though they dispute that, they have an obligation under international law to facilitate the flow of aid. Right. Yeah. So that's another layer of why they have to be letting people in, but they, you know, they don't, but they have to be.
Mm.
But we're not trying to bring humanitarian aid to Gaza as like the sole, as like the main, as the main purpose, because it's, you know, it, where these are sailboats, that, that aid is piecemeal. This is a direct action protest. Like, we're trying to go up to the line and trying to break the blockade. And I also think, like, yeah, I think it's the humanitarian framing I really personally struggle with, because, like, the Palestinian people don't need to be saved or rescued from anything, and don't, and I think humanitarian aid has its roots in, like, this really deeply colonial context that can't be, like, you know, unwoven. Like, it's been, you know, humanitarian missions, humanitarian aid, humanitarianism have been such key tools of colonial domination in terms of, yeah, like, in terms of empires, and, like, the Palestinian people are, like, engaged in, like, the true and righteous and rightful, like, struggle for their own liberation. And I think it's, like, the role, I think, of this mission in the way that, like, I understand it to be and I see it, is that it is about, like, challenging the blockade. Because, yeah, like, it's about challenging the blockade.
Yeah. You don't want to be a white savior.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah. And I think, it's the thing, you have to constantly be interrogating that, because, like, no matter, like, personally for me, like, no matter how much I try to think about that, because it's important, like, aspects of that are always in things, because I'm a white person traveling, I'm a white settler in so-called Australia traveling to the other side of the world to engage in this sort of, like, act of protest. And I think it's, like, constantly worthwhile to interrogate why I'm doing things like that, because like, I think there is the criticisms of white saviorism in movements like this are so incredibly valid and need to be paid constant attention, especially when they're coming from, you know, like, people who should have the most say in these debates.
Yeah.
And I, like, wholeheartedly personally believe in, like, a diversity of tactics, and different organizations have shifted to, you know, using sailboats maybe to do other sorts of actions in the Mediterranean, which I completely agree and would have loved to have been a part of did I not have like a finite time to be in this area before I go back home. Like, I think, yeah.
So what dock, do you know what dock you're aiming for if you reach Gaza?
Well, I guess, like, there's none that exist because Israel's bombed them all. So, no. You know, no boats have made it since 2008.
Yeah.
And so no. Like, there are protocols in place for the sort of disembarkment should it happen, that I can't talk about, but there's no sort of, like, and the Gaza Strip is so small, we're just, like, aiming, and, you know, 50% of what we understand the Gaza Strip to be, like, when we look at it on a map today, 50% of the Gaza Strip today is occupied.
Yeah.
So, like, it's smaller and smaller and smaller. Like, Israel have taken 6 kilometers roughly off the top, 6 kilometers roughly off the bottom. So, like, the landing zone is very small. Mm. But no, there's no dock, there's no port that we're aiming for because they don't exist anymore.
And how can people at home support the cause and, you know, make sure that you're safe by keeping an eye on you guys and of course, support Palestinians as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's like a twofold answer to that, which is like the first and far less important to me is you can follow like the tracker of the Freedom Flotilla. If you Google Freedom Flotilla tracker, Freedom Flotilla live tracker, it will come up with our, you know, constant location. And there are live streams on YouTube available at sort of Freedom Flotilla website and also on YouTube where you can see a live stream of us constantly, which is, and our boat has a particularly high definition good angle. So you can see a whole lot of what's going on for me all the time. And that's a great way to keep us, you know, like, and it, to be sharing that with people and all of that. I guess that's how you keep us safe.
Yeah.
In a way. And also, I guess, if interception does happen, like, it's the emailing of, even though I don't really believe in this in any meaningful way, because I'm quite disillusioned, generally, like, you know, emailing MPs and elected officials. You know, I live in Nam, so there will be a lot of that will, you know, hopefully be happening for me and my friend, especially. I've got two friends on Freedom Flotilla mission from so-called Australia, mm-hmm. one who lives in Mianjin and one, and myself and Violet who live in Nam. So there will be that. And then, but I guess it's supporting the cause more broadly, just, like amplifying Palestinian voices, amplifying anti-Zionist voices, not normalizing like the sort of horrific actions of Israel all the time. Like, I think we're so desensitized to what they're doing. Like, it's pretty, you know, I catch myself all the time like feeling unsurprised that they've just kidnapped a bunch of people in like near Greece. It's like, what are they like? But then I catch myself, I'm like, what the fuck is that? Like, they just kidnapped like hundreds of people from all around the world, literally just outside of Greek territorial waters. Yeah. Like, that's so crazy. Like, they're not even close. Like, they're like days and days and days and days and days away from Gaza. And but you find yourself like not being shocked by that, because why would you be, like, when they've just killed hundreds of thousands of people? But I think it's like, and that shouldn't be the most important thing, that they've just kidnapped a bunch of predominantly white people in the Mediterranean. Like, but it's a constant thing of like reminding yourself to feel like, to feel shock, you know, because obviously you're never surprised, but I think we need to like remind ourselves to feel shock about these things, because like it can't be normalized, otherwise they continue to get away with this. And I think just having conversations as well with friends and family is something that I've found to be really important. Like, that's a huge part of why I'm doing this personally, is because like I'm not a celebrity or anything, but I can engage with people who know and love me really meaningfully.
Yeah.
And that's really important. I think as well, like, people who know me, being able to like talk to their friends and family who've heard of me or know me about what I'm doing, it means like I've got a lot of like extended family now paying attention to something I've been trying to get them to pay attention to for years.
Yeah.
And that's important. So I think doing that's also important.
And, yeah, turning that shock into action as well.
Turning that shock into action, totally. Because I think it's as well, this has really shown me, like, how important, like, all doing what you can within your capacity as much as you can is. Because I think, like, I am quite, like, into direct action. I feel like the last few years I felt like really throwing myself at a wall in a way of, like, doing things that I found really difficult, that really scared me a lot of the time. And I think this experience is really, like, allowing me to slow down and understand like how important all forms of direct action are, like, and just like just taking time with yourself in a way that allows you to continue to like show up for people around you and educate yourself. And so I just want people to like continue to like protest, continue to, you know, if you like if you like making things, make political art and look out for your communities in those ways and help your next door neighbor and write and, you know, do all these sorts of things and donate to mutual aid.
Yeah.
Is like a really big one, really important to me. Like I'm about to launch a mutual aid fundraiser for Palestine, Lebanon and MOB, trying to raise $15,000 by the time I get home. And so I think like amplifying mutual aid initiatives and starting your own, like pooling funds, really important. And you can totally make a difference. Like I'm so shocked all the time about how I can start a mutual aid pool and within a week, we've pooled $3,000 and it's just people in my little community and people they know. And it's not many people, but many hands make light work, I guess. Like, I think that's a really great way you can make an impact.
Yeah, well, when you come back, maybe you should come back on the show. Tell me about your new mutual aid things.
Yes. Yeah.
I think that's a great way to end it. Well, I did want to ask you, probably should have asked you this at the start, but how you got involved with activism and pro-Palestinian activism?
I think I've always been very – my parents have always – been really involved in sort of First Nations issues especially from like a legal aspect. And so I grew up watching the news and watching them do lots of work that I thought was quite cool. And I think after a couple of years ago, I started to Google Israel-Palestine and I realized that I'd been told for a very long time it was very complicated. But then I did some Googling and I was like, oh my God, wait, this is settler colonialism. And like, we have that at home. And I understand that, as much as I could at the age of it was like 19 or something, at home.
Yeah.
And that just blew my mind because suddenly it was so simple. And so it was really like the connection and like, it comes up in all the different ways, like the connections between like First Nations peoples and like Palestinian peoples and like, you know, Indigenous peoples resisting settler colonialism all across the world. And I think it was like that connection that just changed everything for me and is what I ground myself in and is what I ground myself, because like is how I also ground myself in like what I'm doing now, because it is all connected. And I think... yeah, like I got really involved in like the student movement at Melbourne Uni, but that's a story for another time because they've tried so hard to get rid of me. They made me do so many misconduct processes. They sent the police to my house. I spent like a year trying to evade getting expelled, and it was just so hectic and awful. And that was, I kind of got involved there because there was this Palestinian man, Mahmoud Al-Nalouk, he'd received a scholarship to start international relations, his master's at Melbourne Uni in 2023 at the end. And just before he was going to leave, he was martyred with 20 members of his family in Gaza in October of 2023. And the University of Melbourne just did nothing. I just remember watching like Palestinian students, like my friend Dana Al-Shia, like watching her like beg the university to care or to like pay attention or to have any sort of comment, any sort of empathy whatsoever. And they just like stared her down.
Yeah.
And it was just so shocking to me. And I just got really involved in the student movement and met just some of the most incredible people who I'm still incredibly close with today. And feel very lucky that the movement I was a part of was led by like Muslim students, Palestinian students. Like UniMel for Palestine was like eight or nine people, and they were all like, you know, it was Muslim students, First Nations students, and staff members, and like having that guidance that wasn't just like, I don't know, like young white socialists was like quite formative, you know?
Yeah.
Like really quite formative. And so yeah, that was kind of how I got involved.
Amazing. Well, do you have any last words for listeners?
Um, Bro, I don't know. Have a shower for me. Like, for real. Like, you don't know. It's really grim out here. But it's also not perspective, but like have a shower for me. Yeah, no, you especially. The stinky boy.
I'll be stinky and numb for you.
Yeah, it's fuck yeah. No, but anyway, thank you so much for chatting. It's also just so nice to speak on the phone.
Bye. And that was Gemma O'Toole on the Freedom Flotilla on the Adela. If you want to watch the live stream to keep an eye on them, search Freedom Flotilla Coalition on YouTube to find the live stream. And to find their tracker, go to freedomflotilla.org/FFC-tracker/. And to follow her Instagram for info on her mutual aid and follow her mission to Gaza, go to @Beanie, BEANIE _613.
3CR is about community, and we welcome your participation at the station.
3CR is open to a wide diversity of volunteers and is a great way to connect with Melbourne's activist community.
Have you ever thought about volunteering, doing a reception shift, getting a program on air,
training in radio skills, or contributing to one of the station's committees?
There are many ways to be involved at 3CR.
To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au and get in touch.
The Common Social Change Library is an online collection of educational resources for those involved in community campaigns and social and labour movements. It collects, curates and distributes key lessons and resources from progressive movements from around Australia and across the globe. The library includes over 1,400 resources covering campaign strategy, community organising, activist history, digital campaigning, justice, equity, diversity and inclusion, and much, much more. It's free to access the library, so check out the collection at www.commonslibrary.org.
And now you're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show here on 3CR on 855 AM. And last up on the show, we're going to be bringing you the third episode of Weighing Beats Per Minute, which is all about the importance of insects within ecosystems. And this week's episode is focusing on fire ecology. Stay tuned.
Insects and music, you can't refuse it. It's time to choose it before we lose it. 90 boom at 120 hash. Wing beats per minute happen so fast. Wing beats per minute. Wing beats per minute.
Welcome to another episode of Wing Beats Per Minute with myself, Michael Smith, and Jared Geddes, where we talk about ecological issues with a focus on insects. And then we have a tenuous link, which is a musical track that links into something we've spoken about in the show. G'day mate, is there anything that's got your back up in the conservation / environmental game at the moment?
Well, we are in autumn time, which is my favourite time of the year. It's so beautiful. But one thing that happens at this point in time is the state government start to burn the forests of Victoria, and that really gets my back up, actually.
Oh, in particular when, you know, the most recent science from gun forest ecologists in Australia, people that have their research peer-reviewed, and their information is saying that, you know, within that 5 to 7 year period, you might reduce some of those finer fuels in the understory, But after that, what happens is you're getting 40 to 50 years after that where the forest is actually more flammable. So why would you do it? I think at this point it is important to say we are no forest fire ecologists, but we do take note of what the independent, well-researched and published experts are saying on this topic, in particular Phil Zylstra and David Lindemeyer, and highly recommend looking up their peer-reviewed papers on the impact of planned burning.
With that seven-year period after a burn, what happens is the fuel levels reach the same as they were before or higher, but the structure of the forest is different now. So there's a lot of sapling wood, and so there's a lot of fine fuels, elevated fine fuels through the forest, which makes it far more flammable.
Yeah, and then you're getting that laddering effect because you've got these small shrubs really close together. So horizontally they burn, then they burn the next one, then suddenly those flames go vertical. They hit those tall trees like the eucalypts you were saying. And what do they do once they're there? They're closer to the canopy, and then it can just, wind can rip through because all these tall trees have collapsed in previous events. And then suddenly those flames get whipped up into the canopy.
And the other thing, when you've got all that whipstick growth and seedlings and young saplings, they take a lot of moisture and a lot of water out of the soil. So they just naturally suck so much more water out of the forest, where a stable forest with large trees, the water retention in the soil is really high. So it keeps a moisture environment. So these burns create more drier and drier forests.
And these older forests, they naturally start thinning out. So, and as a result of that, trees have less competition, they can grow taller, and these large trees, instead of becoming a pulse of fuel, they're actually helping the forest be able to protect itself from burns. And that links back to the dynamics, so they can prevent wind ripping through, which is really important. And what Deka seem to do is they've got this modelling where it's just all about fuel. They're not thinking about the dynamics. So as a forest gets older, in their modelling, they're saying, well, it's more likely to burn, which is not the case. Younger forests that have a lot of regrowth, so a pulse of plants, are way more likely to burn than these older forests that have got systems and things in place to help prevent and limit the possibility of these really large crown fires. And so, I mean, it's so amazing to have all this great research out there from people like David Lindemeyer and Phil Zylstra that are absolutely geniuses and take the time to really consider all the different aspects that contribute to fire and put it in their modelling. So they're not just thinking about fuel loads. And with Phil, because he's actually been in the planned burn game, he's seen things happen firsthand, he's realised it doesn't work, and then he's gone into the university research game. So he is, look, in my eyes, potentially the best person to listen to. And I listened to him out in a forest in Tulangi, on one side of the road. It had been burnt, most recently been burnt in 2009 fires in King Lake. On the other side had been burnt 5 to 7 years ago. Now, if you looked at that side of the road where the forest had been burnt 7 years ago, there was just so many saplings. There was hop gardenias. There was a range of acacias. There was these young eucalypts. And there was no gaps, hardly any gaps between these plants. And it was so easy for a plant that burnt to burn another plant, to burn another plant, to burn another plant. And as I was saying earlier, that's the vertical shape of the fire. But once you get a bulk amount of plants on fire, it's so easy for them
to go horizontal
and then rip into the tall tree layer and then jump up like that laddering effect. And you could see firsthand what he was talking about. But on the other side that had been burnt in 2009, the forest had started thinning out. Albeit there was, it wasn't perfect because it needs more time. But if we burn that again, we're taking that time away. So if you leave that forest alone for another 50, 70 years, as Lindemeyer and Zylstra are saying, it will put its own checks in place to prevent or limit the capacity to have these large crown fires. This idea that, you know, Deka can do these burns every 10 to 12 years just seems absolutely ridiculous, because they don't have the people power to do it. They don't have the funding, because it costs so much to do these burns and it's not making a difference. And what research is saying, and this research is from the government itself, that trees are 28 times more likely to collapse in burnt areas than not. That's collapse. If you add in hollows that have been burnt as well, some people say that adds up to potentially, in a planned burn area, 50% of trees being damaged. And I've recently been in a planned burn area in King Lake, and it is shocking to see all the collapsed trees. Now, if you go back in another month's time, there'll be more trees that are collapsed. And there's hollows that have been burnt. Where do the animals go? Well, I'm assuming they seek some of them, if they can, if it's part of their behavioural traits, to seek shelter in these hollows. So there's plenty of research out there saying, you know, charismatic, threatened species like the southern greater glider has really suffered because of these planned burns. And there's lots of other animals like the Leadbeater's possum as well that rely on very specific things in a habitat to be able to live there. And these planned burns and the logging that goes on for to get the area so-called prepared for these burns, like getting, you know, big trees out of the way and clearing the tracks, is really detrimental to these animals that rely on hollows. We've got glossy black cockatoos down in East Gippsland, and in the 2019 fires, they lost up to a third of their habitat. These are awesome animals, love them. We need to protect them, but we need to start thinking about biodiversity in general, and planned burns are not good for overall biodiversity.
Well, just as these threatened species are put under pressure by the controlled burns, so does every other animal and insect and plant in the forest get put under the same sort of pressure and stress on the system. One of them that springs to mind is the banksias. The banksias up in the King Lake Range is there. Beautiful, beautiful plants, and very iconic Australian plants.
Well, Banksia cunninghamii, that does not shoot back after a fire. It does not have lignotubers. So the adults, they actually pass away with the burn if the fire is hot enough and gets to them. Now, it's all very well to say that, oh, well, the seedlings will come up. But we don't want a heap of Banksia seedlings coming up. And we want the flowers as well on the adults. And if they want to burn every 10 or 12 years, it's going to take that amount of time for the seedlings to come back, for them to be able to produce food for the honey eaters, for the feather-tailed glider, for potentially honey possums that feed on them. So we need adult trees out there. So if we actually thought about the system and biodiversity in general and trying to look after most native animals, then we'd be thinking about Banksia marginata and Banksia cunninghamii, because they are flowering, you know, they overlap their flowering times, sort of autumn into spring. And they provide so much food when there's not a lot of other flowering plants around. And I've been into King Lake, seen the crescent honey eater feeding on them. I've seen the feather-tailed glider at night time feeding on banksias. We need those plants around. So yes, we need to protect the large trees with hollows, definitely. But we also need to be thinking about other parts in the system that might not be threatened on some government document, that are real powerhouses that provide great habitat for the system and therefore biodiversity. And speaking of plants that, you know, aren't a threatened species and then therefore aren't really considered when it comes to factoring in management with these planned burns, we've got acacia species. We've also got some pomodoro in places like King Lake. And these plants can be loaded with grubs. And on multiple occasions, I've seen almost like a gang of yellowtail cockatoos just ripping these plants to shreds to get grubs and having an actual ball.
Yeah, they're amazing how they just get into trees and just like hook into the grubs and stuff and just work the, you know, work it away. They're so beautiful, aren't they?
It's magic to see, because mostly you see them feeding on pine cones that obviously aren't natural to Greater Melbourne. So to see them actually feeding on something that is native is almost like a blast from the past. So we need to be thinking about these elements within a system, not just the threatened species. And they also get into decurrens as well, which is unbelievable.
Well, they break open a lot of wattle seeds and spread them around and eat them, and they do so much like that, don't they? They just cause havoc, really.
Yeah, it's wonderful to see. I mean, we've got butterflies in East Gippsland. I see the yellow-spotted blue, which is just this amazing butterfly. And the top side of the wings, you get these little yellow patches. Now, they can't escape a really hot burn, and these plant burns are hot. They do rip through the forest. Where do they go? Where do they get shelter after the burn if they happen to survive? There's hardly any understory left. And then you've got the sward brown butterflies, magic. They love the sward grass, but that goes too.
Yeah, that's right. It's a really good point, because where do the animals go? It just made me think of lyrebirds, actually. You know, a common bird in the tall forests of Victorian high country. Where do they go?
If you lose that bird from a landscape, you're losing an experience. People go to forests to listen to animals.
The other thing that the lyrebirds do is they turn over the forest floor. Like, they're like composting machines. They do so much in the forest.
Yeah, I mean, and those small, well, they're not small things, but to a lot of people, those little elements within the ecosystem are not even considered, and therefore considered small or not at all. But you need that turnover for the plants to pop up, to the seeds to come to the top of the soil and so forth.
The department barely takes any notice of threatened species, so they certainly don't take any notice of more common species.
Yeah, I mean, you think of the agile antechina, supposedly a common mammal. Now, how many people have seen one? Because they're nocturnal, they came out at nighttime. Absolutely fantastic animals. Now, they're predating on a lot of insects. So when their cover goes with a plant burn, they don't feel comfortable. And or they're not even there because they're incinerated. And where's their food source? Now, there's some reports on the internet saying that Forest Fire Management Victoria have done some surveys and they come back after 2 years. We don't want them to be leaving areas. We want them to be protected in these areas where they live.
Yeah, and they need logs on the ground. They need habitat and stuff so they can move through the forest floor and getting the insects. And when the burns go through, that is all incinerated. So they don't have any habitat structure.
Yellow-bellied gliders as well mostly feed on gum, I'm led to believe, but they will also feed on insects as well. So insects might not be a major part of the diet, but as we know as humans, we need balanced diets. So often eating a range of different things is great for these animals in forests.
That's right, and that's where the insects can step up when, you know, that they're needed in some ways. Like, they'll be eating them when they need to.
Well, honey eaters are a classic example. We have the yellow-faced honey eater that at certain parts of the year is likely to be eating more insects than nectar. We also have the crescent honey eater, but you're always going to have birds such as whistlers and the shrike thrush that depend on eating insects all year round.
Yeah, that's right. Hence, you need as much structure in the forest to, you know, to promote the insects or as many different creatures as you can.
Absolutely. Keep the structure, keep the animals. It's not just threatened species. It's not just threatened species. It's not just threatened species. And the tenuous link track we have for you today is a collab between one of the best hip-hop producers in the world, Pete Rock, who in the 90s teamed up with a rapper called I&I. One of their all-time tracks is called Step Up. And as Jared mentioned earlier in the podcast, insects really do step up and play such an important part in the system, a part much larger than their body size.
You know, if you can get it out. I ain't gonna say it, cause I'll mess it up. Go ahead though, James. You know what I'm saying? Ionizing the place. Here to do our thing, you know what I'm saying? Step up time. Time to claim something that's real out here, you know what I'm saying? Something that you can live for, you know what I'm saying? Your seeds, you know what I'm saying? Time to step up, yo.
I stay at the center of news, the gossip and interview.
You can't lose, G.
Overstand the rules, see the style can get rude when you witness the guard of the groove. Saying the shit is smooth
to make you move.
Show and prove, plus attract a lot. Yeah, I'm hot like what? Up in your face with the product. No hesitation in a world of frustration, cause I'm facing a grown man sports situation.
Each time we hit the studio, we lay down laws with no pause. We already belittled the flaws. Shit perfection like the ultimate driving machine. We stand lean and always literate what we mean. Brothers, don't be overstanding the plans that we be having. Crushing all these clowns, cause it's all about the mic grabbing. I'm from the land where the righteous and the rude rest. The Vernonville, we're living life, it be the true test.
Step up, step up, step up time, step up.
Yeah.
Step up time.
Step up time.
Yeah, yeah. Step up time. Step up, yo. Step up time. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Step up time. Step up. Step up time. Step up, kid. Step up time. Yeah, yeah.
Step up, turn. The prayer starts, now you smell the first sparks of the flame. The guards warn me that it's not a game, so it's he, so proceed. The first seed was dropped when I and I came to rock the spot.
What?
I caught the props when I flocked to the hot jams at the city. The shorties look pretty, wanna join my committee of rude boy rebels, underground like the devil. But I never pray, just maintain eyes dazed from smoke. And thoughts about the stages getting smoked, concentration on going for broke. You know you can't cope with the roster with the fire in his eyes. Yo, there ain't no surprise, I keep it live to survive the shitstorm. I can't get caught up as a victim, but if I do, I go out licking, over the sticking. Cause I'm about fed up as a fat boy. It's time for I and I to make noise. And step up.
Yeah. Step up time, step up. Step up time, step up. Step up time, son. Yeah. Step up time, step up. Step up time. Step up, step up time, step up, step up time, yeah, yeah, step up time.
Yeah, so now you know there's no need to stop elevating, penetrating the glass top. Hold on to manhood with all your life, cause some situations are bound to give strife. You won't get a harvest if you don't sow seeds. Ill gain wealth brings stress from dirty deeds. The choices that you make will fulfill your needs, but the shit you go through will be hard to believe.
Yo, this shit's ridiculous, and I should know by now. Still this particular flow gets me over somehow. From selling krills in the streets,
what?
To making fat beats. You fucking with cheats to make your ends meet. The wrong move spells defeat, so wisdom is shown. Things I see versus the knowledge that's known.
Peace,
I won't apologize for seeds I've sown. It's step up time, you on your own.
So step up. Step up time, step up. Step up time, yeah, yeah. Step up time, step up. Step up time, come on. Step up time, step up. Step up time, step up, kid. Step up time, yeah, yeah. Now we out, I and I.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast.
Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
Play-based, culturally safe early learning is available in Victoria and sets our kids up for life. That's why Koori Kids can access 15 hours of funded three-year-old kindergarten a week. And to give our kids even more opportunities to socialise and learn through play, from 2026, four-year-old kindergarten hours will increase up to 25 hours a week. Together, we can give our Koori Kids the best start. Search Koori Kids Shine to learn more. Authorised by the Victorian Government, Melbourne.
A 3CR supporter.
Keffiyehs are Palestinian scarves, and they're a symbol of support for justice for the Palestinian people. From the traditional black and white keffiyeh to an array of modern designs, explore the range and order online or drop by 3CR during business hours. Wear your support for the rights of Palestinians. Go to keffiyehs.org.au. That's keffiyehs.org.au. A 3CR supporter.
At my age, preparation is just part of life. To prepare for viruses like influenza and COVID, I get vaccinated regularly. Viruses are always changing. That's why vaccination really matters, to protect yourself against serious disease and hospitalization. And the risks go up when you turn 65. Vaccination is the best preparation. Speak to your health professional and book your vaccinations today. Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra.
A 3CR supporter.
And that brings us to the end of the show. Last on this show, we were listening to the third episode of Wing Beats Per Minute, all about the importance of insects within ecosystems. And this week's episode was on fire ecology. And then second on the show, we brought you a conversation I had with my friend Gemma O'Toole, and she is currently on the Freedom Flotilla on the Adela to watch the live stream of her on the boat to Gaza. Search Freedom Flotilla Coalition on YouTube, and to watch the tracker, go to freedomflotilla.org/FFC-tracker-. And to follow her Instagram for more information on her mission and her mutual aid, you can go to @Beanie, BEANIE _613. And do you want to tell us what we had at the start of the show?
Yes, so we started the show with two speeches from Saturday's Protect the NDIS rally by two disabled people. We heard from Christian Astorian and Ishtar Hope. Very good examples of why we should be saving the NDIS. But you can listen to the rest of those speeches if you missed them or weren't able to attend on the 3CR website by searching Protect the NDIS rally at 3cr.org.au. And also, just lastly, before we go, I'd like to just mention an event happening tomorrow night hosted by the Homeless Persons Union. They're hosting an event called The Big Lean, which is a community event in solidarity with Melbourne's homeless community, who are, you know, increasingly with what's happening in Footscray and CBD, are being forced into, you know, the background of the city as they prevented from leaning and sitting against city buildings and for begging as well. So tomorrow night from 5 p.m, community members will be encouraged to lean and sit against Melbourne Town Hall in challenge of the City of Melbourne's quote-unquote community safety officer program, which was revealed in The Age in April to encourage practices of force towards and deny the homeless community access to public space. So, as I said, that's happening tomorrow from 5 p.m. at Melbourne Town Hall. Please go down and show your support to the homeless community. And we will see you next week. Stay tuned for Women on the Line.
Bye.
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical bookstore and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find Nibs opposite reception in the Lygon Street wing of Trades Hall Carlton. You can buy books online and keep up to date with upcoming events at nibs.org.au.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.